Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I'll be talking with Rhys Peck, who is the author of Fox Populism, Branding Conservatism as Working Class. The book is published this year by Cambridge University Press, and I have the real pleasure to have one of my CUNY family members on the podcast. Rhys, how are you doing?
I'm really good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've loved the book, loved reading it. And very curious about asking a number of questions about the work. Before we get to that, maybe you can just introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah. So I got my PhD at UC San Diego in the Department of Communication. And before that, a little more personal background, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, you know, part of the inspiration for the book really started in my undergraduate years when I kind of came of political age, so to speak. This was during, to date myself, this is during the heart of the Bush era. And one thing that I was fascinated with was witnessing how the Bush administration politically instrumentalized country music, specifically in the buildup to the Iraq War. Now, my family, specifically my brother, was actually an aspiring country singer who tried to make it in Nashville. And country has always been a central part of my family gatherings. And so I went into graduate school with this kind of vexing question about the relationship between partisanship and taste, between ideology and style. And looking back now, I really realized that was the kernel of the kind of political cultural approach that I would develop for studying Fox News and for studying partisan journalistic styles more generally.
You grew up in the amazing, beautiful mountains of Utah, and you're now here in New York City. Why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of where you are professionally?
Professionally, so I'm an assistant professor at the College of Staten Island. I am, you know, at the end of my tenure track process, it's pretty exciting to finally have this book out and to, you know, feel like an intellectual and give talks and see what the world thinks of this argument and study that I've been concocting for quite some time.
Great. Well, we will do nothing on the podcast today to derail your, I'm sure, successful tenure and promotion at the College of Staten Island. So let's talk about the book and start with some of you, an understanding of how you approach some of these key terms. So in your title, you refer to populism and also conservatism. When you use these terms in the context of the book, what do you mean by each?
Well, as you know, populism has been a very salient word in the last 2 years. And as such, it is debated. It's been debated endlessly. The definition, what is populism? So political theorists like Ernesto Laclau argue it is precisely the ambiguity of the term that gives it its power, that it is kind of an empty signifier that you can assign to almost any ideological project or social movement or social group. The way that I look at it is I try to set up a model for not just understanding populism in terms of kind of linguistic political rhetoric, but also populism as an embodied performative style. So I divide populism up as both a narrative, which is kind of traditionally how it's been approached in kind of more linguistic-centered studies of political rhetoric, but also as a performance, the performative style. And generally, to go back to the, you know, populism as rhetoric, it's essentially a way of representing the political sphere that radically divides it into two camps. And if we apply this to the media sphere, it Fox News, the way that I write about and analyze, radically divides the media sphere into two dueling media systems, one for the elite and one for the people or the folks, as Bill O'Reilly would call it. So it is a narrative rhetorical tradition that American politicians and in turn news outlets, particularly tabloid outlets, have used to advance ideological point of views and to add kind of moral authority, really, to the political positions that they promote.
So much of the focus of your book is on understanding Rupert Murdoch. For those who do not know his backstory, his interesting and relevant backstory, I wonder if you'd give us the short biography of this owner of Fox News.
So Rupert Murdoch is a fascinating character. Many biographies have been written on Murdoch. What I found interesting was the way that he developed this understanding of class early on in his media career. So he cut his teeth in the infamous Fleet Street sector of London, right, where this very ferocious competitive news industry. And under the guidance of his mentor, Lord Beaverbrook, right, he kind of understood that news marketing had to do with class and appealing to different class sectors, and not necessarily in an economic way, but more in a normative cultural way. And so he brought this tabloid style back to his home country of Australia and turned various newspapers into tabloid outlets. And he used a similar kind of anti-elite market positioning strategy that he would bring back to the UK and then eventually to the US, where he'd find a kind of established news outlet and then counter-program to them, paint them as the elite, out of touch, and paint his paper as tapping the pulse of the people. And so that starts very early on. But he gets to the US and he finds out that the working class kind of taste strategy that he used in London with tabloid papers like The Sun and News of the World was not working, or it was yielding mediocre profits. So the first real attempt to adapt a kind of British style tabloid format to the US is really the New York Post, because in the UK, tabloids were not just about celebrity sex scandals or UFO sightings and things like that, or sports. They mixed those tabloid elements with political editorializing and partisan views. So this kind of tabloid partisan mix, he brought this back to the US with the New York Post, but he was finding that he didn't have the kind of political clout that he had in the UK. And one thing he came to realize was that in the US, the television set reigned supreme, not the newsstand. So he shifted News Corp, the kind of media conglomerate that he established in Australia, shift their energies in the US toward television. And he purchases and launches Fox Broadcasting Network, the first successful fourth network. Which in of itself is an amazing feat. There was many attempts to establish a fourth network and break the kind of triopoly between ABC, CBS, and NBC, but Murdoch was the first to actually pull it off.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And let's talk sort of historically. What is the time period that we are now in with Murdoch's move into television? And as you talk about that, there's this style that he brought to news, which is different than the traditional style of news at the time. Maybe you could talk about what the tradition had been stylistically, and how Murdoch's style was very different from this in the TV news operations that he was involved with.
Yeah, so journalism scholars such as Dan Hallin have used the term the high modern style of journalism. And this style was really embodied by Walter Cronkite, you know, this detached middle-brow voice, right, that was really envisioned the news anchor as an informational expert. And their job was to inform the public. And this reigned from the 1940s all the way to the 1980s, this detached kind of anchoring style. And it, which saw, you know, injecting your personal opinion or your emotion as a liability to your legitimacy. And Murdoch really broke that mold. In the first attempt to adapt a kind of tabloid style to the medium of television that my book examines was A Current Affair. I really emphasize how important A Current Affair, which was a News Corp product, syndicated tabloid television program, that was hosted by Mari Povich in the late 80s. And interestingly enough, at the exact same time, there was another aspiring tabloid anchor named Bill O'Reilly that worked for Inside Edition. So Bill O'Reilly was in direct competition with Mari Povich at A Current Affair. And it's in this moment, really, that Mari Povich, and with Bill O'Reilly following, and then a slew of copycats that start to follow A Current Affair, that you get this new style of anchoring that does inject personal opinion, that does take sides, that uses body language, emotional forms of communication to engage their audiences and connect with their audiences, that I try to argue is kind of the beginning of this style. The problem with A Current Affair and these tabloid shows is they lacked a kind of political seriousness. They were not taken serious by the political establishment and the journalistic establishment, mainly because their editorial focus only looked at soft news topics. So they weren't this mix between, you know, a tabloid style and then politics. They really stayed away from politics. So it's with Fox News that you truly get the confluence of those two things on American television.
And now Fox News begins. Is it the Fox News that we see today, or is Murdoch's initial foray into creating Fox News different somehow? Maybe you can compare in some ways the style and approach that was taken at its origin from what we've become familiar with today.
Right. So journalists like Gabriel Sherman, in his excellent book, Loudest Voice in the Room, biography on Roger Ailes, he notes how in the beginning of Fox's history, the very early launching years, 96, 97, 98, that he argues the network was more populist and tabloid than conservative. And there was this moment where there really was a sort of conflict or war between two factions of the organization. There was a tabloid kind of wing that really came from the tabloid production staff that Roger Ailes, the founding CEO of Fox News, recruited. So Roger Ailes, many forget this, that he was a consultant for A Current Affair and Inside Edition. So he was well aware of the kind of talent of the tabloid sector, and he recruited people like Bill O'Reilly and Shepard Smith and a slew of other producers, as well as Geraldo Rivera later in 2001. But there was another wing that was kind of, we could say, is the prestige wing. And these are folks like Britt Hume and John Moody, who come from traditional journalistic backgrounds. And they were kind of a ballast or counterweight to this tabloid wing. And so there was this tension there in the beginning. And yes, they were conservative, but they were still practicing journalism in the mold of the traditional kind of Cronkite style. Now, as far as, I'm not sure what your question is, when did Fox change and become more overtly conservative? Or I'm not sure what the question is there.
Yeah, so the question is whether it's changed over time. And one of the things that you argue is that Fox News has successfully linked the working class people that it caters to with a business class of people. And some of this is reflected in these two different wings that you just articulated. I wonder, how has Fox News done this? Because from most people's impression, this would be a merger that doesn't seem to make very much sense. How have they created a style that is as attractive to their working class viewers as the business class viewers?
Well, one of the things that I point to is the resonance of these very old rhetorical and narrative traditions that engage the issue of wealth and wealth distribution. So my study really zeroes in on the Great Recession and specifically Fox's coverage of the financial crisis, which I saw as a fascinating case study, because here you have a moment where you'd think the Democrats would have a natural advantage and conservatives who have historically, you know, supported tax cuts for the rich and deregulation would have a disadvantage. And yet I was fascinated how Fox was able to take these old tropes about the producers versus the parasites and these moral rationales about, you know, we should live in an economy that rewards hard work and labor and remunerates, you know, those who produce and doesn't reward the kind of parasitic groups. And so I kind of make the argument that Fox's approach to economic news stories is less about this kind of technical economic reasoning and is more about using these moral economic principles that are deeply seated in American culture to draw an alliance between the business class and the working class that is more about a shared morality, a shared commitment to a meritocratic economy than it is necessarily about the immediate self-interest of each one of these divergent economic groups.
So you sort of just alluded to the way in which Fox News has relied on an approach to information that has downplayed sort of expertise. But you do in the book describe a certain approach they have to working with think tanks and experts. How have they done this? How have they incorporated science, ideas, evidence into the style that you've described, which seems so antithetical to that?
Right. This is one of the great ironies that I point to in the book, that on one hand, Fox News appropriated a kind of conservative populism that comes from the Nixon era that centered on a story about how educated elites have taken over the government and how they take the wealth of you know, traditional producing class Americans and impose foreign ideas on them. And at the exact same time, the conservative movement is building up its think tank infrastructure and promoting conservative intellectuals like Milton Friedman and William F. Buckley. It's a very intriguing paradox. And so what I wanted to look at is the way that they handle that contradiction in their actual programming. And so you'll see in the later chapter of my book, I try to show how they in fact incorporate expert forms of knowledge, and promote conservative intellectual culture on their populist shows, and how they keep the kind of elitism of expert knowledge at arm's length. And they have various maneuvers to kind of bring down to earth this elite, rarefied knowledge, while at the same time using its prestige and using its authority to advance its conservative economic arguments. So it's a very delicate balance between the populist everyday hosts like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, and then the experts from the think tank world that they have on. And I think it's one of the most sophisticated elements, the way that Fox News simultaneously sort of demonizes educated elites while using their own experts and their own intellectuals to advance conservative arguments.
So I don't know how this is possible, but we've gone the entire conversation thus far about your books, Fox Populism, and Donald Trump has not come up once. Donald Trump, in his early days, had a very strong relationship with the New York tabloid newspapers. I wonder if you can place him into the history and development of Fox News, and then maybe we can talk about where his relationship is today. But is he involved in this early time period in 1996, 1997? Is he on these shows, or does his arrival come much later?
Well, I have to claim a little bit of ignorance on this topic. I'm not an expert on Donald Trump, but I will say that, yes, you can see he was a guest on O'Reilly and Hannity going back to the late 90s. He did make appearances, but really, and as far as the New York scene, I mean, he's had a relationship with the New York Post. You know, one of the famous headlines with his affair with Marla Maples, I believe, was, you know, "The greatest sex I ever had," is kind of a classic tabloid New York Post headline. And, you know, we've learned much about his relationship with National Enquirer owner David Pecker. So Trump has been fully enmeshed in the tabloid culture of the 80s and the 90s, you know, going back to those decades. And then if you fast forward to the 2000s, he was at the center of one of the most successful reality shows of network television for 14 years. In addition, he's a full-blown fictional character in World Wrestling Entertainment, right? So Donald Trump's tabloid pedigree is quite deep and extensive. But he, as far as Fox News goes, he doesn't really become a staple of Fox News programming till his appearances in early, 2010, 2011 on Fox and Friends, where it almost became a convention to have him on. I believe there was a segment that was Monday Mornings with Trump in 2011. And this is where you see him become much more, I guess you say, systematically a part of Fox's brand. And in many ways, he embodies Fox's original brand. It's a synthesis between political populism and tabloid journalism. But as far as tracing him back to New York Post and the 90s, I need to learn more about that.
Yeah, the relationship is one that is very hard to separate the two, and how much of Trump's populism is essentially Rupert Murdoch's populism, or how much did Murdoch learn from Trump as he moves from the United Kingdom and Australia to the United States, maybe is a topic for your next book. the current book that is available from Cambridge University Press is Populism: Branding Conservatism as Working Class. The author who you've been hearing from is Rhys Peck. Rhys, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.